You're dedicated to your craft. You've put in the time to hone your skills. You're always looking for new ways to think about your work, and you don't back down from a challenge. Well, this is what it takes to be a visual storyteller. So let's lean into it.
So, hey, Rob.
Jersey.
How's it going?
Going for really good, really good. How are things with you?
I'm doing good. I'm actually getting a full night's sleep. I don't know about you. I understand that you're not.
A lot of exciting things going on. You know, this fun lean into art service and things surrounding it. It's super exciting. And I have a tendency when I get really into things like that, I stay up and go with the flow and keep on working on it.
You find yourself pushing yourself like another 15 minutes, another 15 minutes, another 15 minutes. The next thing you know, it's 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. You know, checking out the goal list and saying like, that one doesn't look too tough. Let me see how fast I can do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the next day you wake up feeling kind of woozy and haggard, and there's no amount of coffee in the world that can save you after that point, right?
Yeah. Let's see.
How do you balance that? How do you get out of that mess? Because that can be a really vicious cycle that you find yourself in.
Oh, it can be. And it's helpful to see it and to come up with to plan your way out of it, right? I mean, so it's a little bit of an only way out is through approach, but not in a, I just want to keep this going, right? I mean, I absolutely want to keep the lean into art or, you know, cool projects going, but you don't have to be at full burn all the time to make it work. It's, you know, when you are, it's like, you're your own most important resource, right? So you just gotta tend to that. I admittedly, I know I've been working a bit longer hours and whatnot, but that's all right. It's fun to see the results. I guess that's my addiction, is seeing things come together and then feeling like, oh cool, that was worth it. Time to take a break, right? And
that was worth the premature aging that I'm doing.
Yeah, exactly. I guess if I'm gonna age somehow, I want it to be worth it.
Yeah, you want to pour that youth into something that's being constructed.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, yeah, it's just it's worth noting that it is a cycle that once you get hooked on making things, that it will you're gonna find. I did the same thing with some Lean Tart stuff a couple nights ago, where it was just one more little thing, and next thing I knew, I looked at the clock. It was 2:30 in the morning, and I had to be up at 8 o'clock. And I'm like, this isn't gonna be good. And then plus you're in that mindset, right? You're in that mindset of excited about building something, and it's really hard to go to sleep after that. You know, you gotta have a cool down.
It's things that will make the addiction worse is finding good ways to compensate for those issues you mentioned, right? The ability to cool down fast.
Yeah.
I have no idea how the heck this worked, but right around in like eighth grade health, how the teacher explained going to sleep made so much sense. And so I just like, oh, okay.
Explain it to me. I need to hear this.
The gist of it is, like, now it's just this emotional feeling, and I remember when I learned it, but to unpack it, it's about just setting aside whatever you're currently working on and knowing it'll be there, and essentially just breathing and blanking your mind and allow your body to do its work. So essentially, shut the brain off, let the body take over, and body's going to say, well, guess what, man? It's time to sleep. You made me go far enough today. And I don't know how, but that works.
That sounds like meditation almost.
I think it kind of is like that. Yeah. But yeah, I didn't get exposed to that till far later.
Well, okay. We needed to do some amending to last the last episode of Lean Into Art, where we were talking a lot about procedural thinking or analytical thinking, breaking things down into bite-sized chunks to consume them. And you had a thought on that about, like, well, what about people who operate from emotion, right?
Yeah, I've occasionally been and have met many artists that operate incredibly effectively out of being more emotional, where I know that I will think about a goal and a plan and picture this thing I want to build, but I don't as often go on this path that when I see it, it's so clear and bright and different than my typical approach that I also appreciate it. And I see it's really effective when artists are like, yeah, I just got home and I painted and that was it. And they allowed their emotions to take over and whatever came out, came out. And it wasn't about, I'm going to address this topic in my painting
or
this action or pose I want to put here. It's just, there's something in them and then it comes out.
Yeah.
And that can be very effective. But I would say that those things don't have to be fully separate. We all have a shared set of human materials that make us up, right? And you know, some of us may be more of one style or another, but we're not as far apart as on the surface it may seem. When you look at someone that's coding like a cool JavaScript thing and someone who's throwing paint at a canvas, they don't necessarily have to be that different. I mean, they're both creating, right?
You know what it reminds me of? Is I did a talk a couple years ago on why superheroes communicate. And I've talked extensively in other audio things about how one of the values I think that entertainment for young people, cartoons, you know, kids' stories, one of the values that they have as well as superheroes is it allows you to role play. It allows you to play act at being an adult before you're an adult. So like, oh, I subscribe to Spider-Man's philosophy. I subscribe to Superman's philosophy. Very different characters. Same thing with cartoons. I've talked about this before. You know, cartoons like G.I. Joe, Real American Hero, all these characters presented you with alternatives to a worldview or an approach to living when you get older, right? I want to be more like Gung-Ho when I grow up kind of thing. But there's an implicit problem in presenting information that way, because it's sort of like a pre-high school version of what you do in high school, where it's like, well, I'm gonna be the country western kid, I'm gonna be the punk kid, I'm gonna be the mod kid. Do you remember mods when you were in high school? Were they around, or was that like just like a very short-lived thing?
Let's see, a little bit where maybe they. I feel like they've kind of brought back. No, that might be I may be thinking of hippie. Hippie style.
But. Mods in the 60s, I didn't know this, but yeah, mods in the 60s was a specific thing. But like, you know, I was in high school in the late 80s, early 90s, and there was this brief period where the kids who listened to The Cure and like did up their hair really big, you know, and like tried to look like whatever that guy's name was from The Cure, Robert Smith.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody called them mods for some reason. They all wore all black and all leather and they painted their fingernails black and acted all sad all the time. But anyway, you know, it's like you go through that thing in high school where you try on identities, figure out who the heck you're going to be and everything. And, you know, unfortunately, some people never outgrow that. Like they got their identity, they got their little niche that they fit into, and like, this is the way I'm going to operate after all. But the threshold to growing up is figuring out that, oh, well, I'm actually all of these things and everybody's all of these things. And because I talk a lot about breaking things down and turning it into some kind of like systematized way of thinking about it, like here's like a, you know, when I'm working on a story, I start with a theme. That's not to say that that's all I think about, or that I don't go back and forth between working from characters, working from premise or plot or setting, and zipping back and forth between those things. That's happening very naturally in my brain after doing a couple different, you know, graphic novels. Now I know how to go naturally between those two different states. And what's more is, where the hell is I going with this?
Well, there's those multiple ways to look at it. You're trying on the different roles, which is a lot like playing.
It is a lot like that. But then where I was going with this is there are times where analysis fails me or where I approach it from a standpoint of, like, I've described this before, like when I'm writing dialogue for a scene, a lot of times that dialogue will not actually be there, but I'll have a rhythm for it. Like I'll actually hear in my head, and I know that that's, and I'll have the emotional context of what's being said, like, right? Or, people should watch the video to see the gesturing that I'm doing. but But yeah, I'm totally overacting. I'm a terrible actor and I know it. But anyway, what I'm saying is that I don't know what is actually being expressed explicitly, but I have a general idea. I have this gut reaction. I have this emotional way of approaching it. I also know, like when I'm writing a scene sometimes, that I want it to feel like this. Like when my brother, Elliot, when he makes theme music for me for like the different audio projects, I don't say to him, well, it should have this in the middle eight and it should have this kind of build and you should use a lot of, you know, sweep arpeggios and whatnot in here. I don't come at it with that kind of like mathematical or analytical approach. I go, you know that scene in The Wrath of Khan where this happened? Could you make something that feels like that, right? And that's how I write sometimes too is, oh, I know how I want this to feel. And yeah, I'm doing this, I'm reflecting on this afterwards and I'm putting words to it afterwards, but this is all to say that I think the majority of us operate and oscillate between those two different kinds of like analytical, this is what I intend to do, or this is what I have to do. This is what's in me and it needs to come out and I can't express it in words right now, but I can throw this paint on the canvas and you'll see what was inside of me. Does that sound like what you're getting at?
It totally does. I think it's like what you're describing is feelings are going to come in somewhere for pretty much everybody who creates. It's sometimes the feelings are more are the guiding goal for the analysis, right? Where the analysis may come in when you need to execute, or the feelings may come in when you need to execute. But like, it's really not an either or thing. It's a mix that could be different for everyone and even on different projects. Or maybe even different mediums, because I know my approach does vary a bit, like depending if I'm going to code or draw or play music.
Right. It also reminds me of something that I was encountering in one of my comics classes for adults, where a student was drawing a scene where she was, it was a memoir, and she was chronicling this really kind of a frustrating week that she was having, where just a whole lot of events lined up to, you know, kind of like prevent her from doing what she wanted to do with her time. And, you know, it was like car repairs, and like the car repairs were really expensive. And then she had to wait around a long time for the estimate call to come in from the mechanic. We've all been there, right? And she's showing all these scenes in her panels that are very diagrammatic or documentary style, where it's like, I'm looking at the phone, looking at me pacing, looking at, you know, the kitchen. And sure. And I'm looking at it, and it didn't really say to me how this moment felt. And so I said, well, you know, it's not enough to deliver the story data of what happened. You got to show me how this moment feels. When that phone rang, how did that feel? Was it relief? Was it anticipation? Was it apprehension? How did that feel? And how can you show me a viewing angle of that phone or you when the phone rings? How can you design the ring of the phone so that it actually expresses how you felt about that moment? And then when he says it's going to be $700, how do you design that moment to make it feel that way too? So like, even if you're not an emotional person, if you are a person who operates in a very analytical way, you've got to get into that mindset if you want to be a visual communicator, because a lot of storytelling is emotion, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's such an ebb and flow back and forth between learning the patterns and the ways to somehow deliberately convey emotion, where it's like you are putting your emotion into it to figure out how you can convey the emotion. And then that's the idea, what you want to see out of the result. It's not a guarantee. It's going to be up to anyone who looks at your art. But chances are, using your own experience as a guide, and you know, how, what, for instance, in your example, what feels small, instead of saying explicitly having a person shown very small in the panel and then the camera angle way up, or you know, somehow do some sort of false perspective that that unifies two different scenes or something, where there's the guy on the phone and he's very large and the person, the woman with the bad news hearing is very, that stuff will just probably come out as you are exploring it, based informed on how that makes you feel. Chances are other people would feel that way too in that situation,
right?
It's like trying to channel empathy, but then all of a sudden deliberately express it and capture it, where likely that's a very much a back and forth experience between like if you're thumbnailing and all of a sudden you recognize, oh, that reminds me of this kind of camera angle. Perfect. So you're going, you're having this dialogue with yourself to discover, which is a kind of, it's a very much an analytical iterative process.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, but that's not to say that there aren't artists out there who can just go straight to the page. Right.
Totally.
I mean, I'm sure there are, I can't, but, I'm sure there are people who are absolutely at ease with going straight. Well, Kirby supposedly, reportedly, he could go almost entirely straight to the page and just start in the upper left-hand corner and start drawing like a dot matrix scanner, or I mean printer, and create the image as if it was just there in his head from the start. You know, it's all different disciplines or different approaches.
A compression of the same skills, though, I would bet. So he probably did it all in his head.
Yeah.
He may have grokked it so deeply inside himself, or maybe he was born with that talent exact inside himself in that way.
Right.
That can happen too. We each have our own, you know, natural shortcuts that are just easier for us. But it's probably the same steps, just in his head.
Yeah. So what's the headline here? What's the headline that we were trying to say with this whole talking about feelings and emotion?
Well, it was just reflecting back on our prior podcast and thinking that, as creators, I think there's really not just one mode to be in. I think when we're interested in teaching a topic, we'll probably be more leaning toward getting analytical, and that's kind of our role, right? Mm-hmm. But we don't have to highlight that as the only way to do it. There's other great approaches, and if you're guided more by your emotion as a creator or your analytical tools and techniques, both are fantastic ways to create, and we'll be exploring both, even though you may hear us highlight that analytical stuff quite a bit. So
yeah, well, you kind of, I mean, just to be fair, you kind of have to when you are talking about something like this, right? Like you can't have like a roundtable discussion on creativity just be like, well, it felt good, well, it felt bad, well, it made me angry, well, it made me happy. You know, if you're just operating purely on emotion, then you don't have a whole lot to talk about. I mean, if you're going to exchange ideas, you have to, you know, kind of get words to it. So there's a sort of a demand for analysis at that point. But we can all get along, and we want all these people to get along, and that's my segue. Hey, how about that? How's that for a segue into talking about what we got? Some of the things we're thinking about for 30 classes and 30 days coming up. And nice. I should say, you know, I didn't say this at the top, but as we're recording this again in Adobe Connect, and there's a video that accompanies this podcast. You can watch the video. You don't have to watch the whole thing. You can just listen to the podcast after the fact if you want to, but you can at least flip through the video a little bit to see what this software is going to look like, what we're going to be using for a lot of these classes. And I can flip through a couple different slides in my presentation. Rob's got a presentation going on at the same time. They can flip through. Look at that. So we can bombard you with information. In our,
yeah, we're going to make you feel like a character in a sci-fi movie leveling up. We're just going to like five presentations all at once, and then like you'll need that emotional part of your brain to suck it all in.
Yep.
But yeah,
it's going to be like Max Headroom Blipverts, where it's going to like just every corner of the screen is just going to be flashing the whole time, and until you puff up and explode,
leading to subliminal art.
Okay. So, but you know what? I also realized while we were talking about this, there's a chat client going on that people can actually participate in while we're talking. We could actually do some of these episodes live, like actually let people know when we're doing it and they could participate via chat. We could.
Yeah, absolutely.
We don't have to, but.
Working with a live audience will be fantastic for the classes, but the podcast, that'll work as well.
Because I assume that I'm gonna type in the chat right now to see if this gets recorded after the fact. So, hi Rob, I like you so much! Exclamation point. And then we'll see if that gets recorded into the video after the fact. Because it'd be cool. I mean, we would have basically a running commentary that would actually get incorporated into the final show. So.
Okay. Thanks for your kind words. I don't want to over encourage that.
This is going to be something I work on every episode is how can I say something to make Rob uncomfortable? Okay. But you can pay me back. You can pay me back next time we get together in the same location. You can just invade my personal space somehow. I invade people's personal space with words.
Darn so, right. That's a good way to do it, actually.
I think words are actually more hurtful. They stick with you longer than physical pain. Well, I mean, I suppose if I like cut your arm off or something, that's a lifetime thing. But for the most part, in a larger sense, if I say something very cruel to somebody, that's going to stick with them for a long time. That's one of the reasons I'm so careful about what try to be careful about what I say. Like the three like big regrets I have in life are things that I said to somebody. Not things that I physically did to somebody, you know.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. For me, it's probably a hybrid. So.
You were saying terrible things to them while you were punching their eye.
you know, playground type stuff, you know.
Yeah. You're saying that there is no God while you were punching them.
Exactly. Yeah. No, okay. Well, the time when I guess I regret the time when I went to kindergarten. I told everyone there's no Santa Claus. Oops.
No, you did?
I did that. I was that kid.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Sorry.
I still wasn't that kid. I would have been the kid who was crying when you did that.
I know. Yeah. Well, Jersey, I'm sorry. I know I'm smiling and whatnot. It's an awkward thing. You know.
with you know. You hopefully get over that stuff. You know, I mean, there were kids who were mean to me in school too, because I was a weird kid. I don't dwell on it. I laugh about it now because I'm a grown up and I've learned to find, you know, my own sense of self-esteem and value in other places, not in whether Chris was nice to me in fifth grade. Right. But then again, that stuff can, you know, have that lasting effect, which is why, you know, I try to be careful with my words. But anyway, that was I don't know what the heck do we call that? What we just did, but 30 classes. In 30 days and bringing people together so they don't fight on the playground, so that they form a community. How do you do that? What do we hope to do, or what is our initial strategy? Let me back up just for a second and interrupt myself as I usually do and say that we're recording these episodes. We're starting these episodes before we're done developing the entire project. So, you know, by the time you're listening to this, we probably have a lot of this stuff figured out, but we're kind of capturing, to use Rob's language, we're capturing a lot of this development as we do it in our thought processes, because I just thought it'd be interesting to share that. Sharing in public. Yeah.
Exactly. We are definitely creating in public. We've done quite a bit of work throughout which we mentioned that a bit on the prior podcast, in building this and figuring out the... What kind of learning environment are we creating through Lean Into Art, and what kind of system of podcasts and all these things that go into, what's the experience going to be like for what we share publicly, and what will it be like for folks that come in as students and teachers as well for workshops and classes. And one of the things that you know you need to do when you're putting together a project and you want to reach out and it's about communicating, and this is about connecting and sharing information and being a facilitating, helpful place for learning, the topic. Well, there's a whole lot of things to set up. But one thing we have in common with any creative effort is spreading the word. And we also have this, we're building it iteratively and all that. So it'd be kind of fun to spread the word as we're building it and do it in a really fun, exciting gesture, which is 30 classes in 30 days. Right.
Right. And one of the issues with distance learning, doing learning systems that are operating online, is you don't have that physical presence of actually being in the classroom with your peers, right? Or being in the lab with your peers, whatever environment you want to describe it as, right? And while I wasn't the kind of guy when I was in college who was making a whole lot of like lifelong friends in those classrooms, there were a couple people, you know, when we had to work on a group project or something that I got along with okay. And, you know, it was, I looked forward to the labs with them because it was fun to work with them and whatnot. And you forge relationships that way. Well, how do you create that in a digital environment, you know? Now, I had been exploring this a little bit through things like the Art and Story podcast, where we had different art challenges that happened in the Art and Story Forum. We had the Tumblr account, which we were inviting participants in the podcast community to post work based on challenges that we would throw out on the show. That's one way to do it. But, you know, an explicit group challenge of some sort, like either a contest or, well, let's talk about like one of the inspirations for 30 classes in 30 days is Tyler James's 30 characters in 30 days, right? That's a huge event now. And it's something that a lot of people become buddies through. I mean, how does that happen? Or I guess we should say what the heck it is.
Well, yeah, as far as what it is, it's essentially a community of artists that are openly invited to commit to this challenge before November starts. And once you do, then the arrangement is to design a character or define a character through a story or both for every day in November. And it's one of those things where whether you do this professionally or you do this, maybe you do part of it professionally and you're exploring the other aspect, like writers are trying out the art or artists trying out writing. It's everyone has their reasons for coming to try that out, because it sounds it's a tantalizing goal to say that I made something new every day, right? Yeah. That lives up to this thing. And what's wild about it is this other aspect of all of us collectively going toward it, and the inspiration of seeing each other performing as you go along and talking about that. So you do make connections and you have that shared experience. And what's interesting, heck, some people join it as teams where there's collaborations between a writer and an artist. So it's wild that it's a catalyst. The event itself isn't like overly prescriptive of the experience that you have to have with the event. But it's a platform where everyone gets to be a part of it and make what they want to make out of it. Like, so it's a really, really cool setup.
It's like a sporting event, isn't it? It's like, I mean, it's not unlike a sporting event.
Totally. Yeah, there's spectators too. And supporters.
Yeah, that's true.
Yep.
So but I just think about like one of the things that happened with the Art and Story podcast, where, you know, the implicit agenda of the show, I mean, well, maybe explicit, because in the earlier episodes we had a longer intro piece of music. And one of the things we used to say on there is, you know, we're going to hit every angle of making comics and maybe get you a little bit more excited about making your own comics. So, you know, that was an intent. Let's get people excited about participating in this medium, right? But when you say... Just like when you go up to somebody and say, like, this is an example I use in my classes all the time. You can't go up to somebody and say, tell me a story. Because they're going to be like, op. And then if I say, well, tell me a story about your 7th birthday party. And then they're like, oh, now I got a place to start from. I got to give me a limitation. You give me a place to begin so I can start building a story here. If you say to people, create. Just make things. It's fun. You're not giving them... I mean, a really dedicated and plugged-in enthusiastic person is going to be able to run with that. But sometimes it can be incredibly incentivizing to say, create this thing in this amount of time and see if you can do it. And you know what? all these other people are going to be there with you doing it. And you just like in a when I was in track, and I actually did a couple sports in high school, and I was in track in ninth grade, and I sucked. I was awful. I was last for every race. There was one race where the announcer left his mic on by accident, and I heard him making fun of me the whole time as I was coming in, like 20 minutes later than everybody else, you know. But my best buddy John, he would be like, let's see who can actually come in the latest, you know. And so like he and I would compete to be the worst on the team, and just having that person there with me to you know, go through this stuff made it a lot more fun to do, right? Like it just as if we were competing to be the best. I mean, that kind of friendly competition inspires you to move forward, gives you that extra strength, and helps you forge connections with people that otherwise you would have very little to talk about with. Or maybe it would be difficult to begin a conversation with them because, like, you know, like one of the common wisdoms that gets punched around the internet, at least used to, is, you know, how do you find your art buddies? Well, go on some art forums and just start talking to people. Well, how do you do that? How do you go into a forum and be like, hi, I make comics and I like to draw, and who else likes to draw? Everybody's going to raise their hand, right?
Yeah. It's, it's the social context, and it's a cool weave of a bunch of different things because, yeah, the social context gives you the platform to say, oh, hi, this is me. And actually, that's part of how Tyler facilitates it as well. So the host of an event can really affect the feel of the event and sort of the seed and the culture surrounding it. And one of the things that he encourages everyone to do is to do this and to do an initial post introducing yourself for everyone who's officially a part of the, like, that site's challenge. And in general, having a very inclusive feel where both, there's no limits as far as who joins other than the date. That's part of the contract.
Yeah.
You know, we're sharing this experience over this time. So yeah, people can take it more seriously and whatnot. Anyway,
no, complete your thought there. You looked like you were about to.
It's just a great way to seed and kick it off, which provides a context for people who may be a little more unsure what to reach out to, because there's people that join 30 characters in 30 days that are super talented artists that are very good at rendering art in a way that is, I mean, they're professionals, right?
Yeah.
And at the same time, there's many of us that were you know, so sort of in between doing some professional work and you know, still on our path. And then there were some people who were just starting out and said, you know what, I can draw a stick figure, but enough people were there already saying, come on, it's all right. They, you know, they joined. But in that context, it's like, well, what doesn't matter your skill level? We're all here to share this together. And
yeah, the interesting thing there is that you're prioritizing the completion of the project over the quality of the work, aren't you? I mean, you still want to do good quality work, and you want to you're engaging in this because you want that kind of critique and interaction and input from your peers on this. But the top priority is finishing, not proving what an awesome illustrator you are, right?
That's the battle that everyone faces with themselves for the event, though. Because most of us will want to only share something we feel that is, you know, up to that test. And especially if you're like, well, there are, let's see, I could go pull up the site to remember some more names, but people like Daniel Govar, right, where he renders some very beautiful realistic characters. And you're like, my God, he's looking at my stuff. I can't post this thing. It's not ready, right? And the people battle that with art challenges. And that's where it's not just an art hangout and an art silly times. It's an art challenge. There's a reason why it's hard. And sometimes I would say for that one, that's like the hard part. That's the hurdle, is producing and doing it consistently every day. Versus dealing with being overly specific about exactly what you finish. But of course, as you get practice and you get more comfortable, of course, you can crank up the challenge. If delivering art at a certain level of rendering or a certain level of completion that you're like, well, I could do better, try. And you can make it as hard or easy as you want.
Mm-hmm. And I'm reminded of something that I heard happens in art school, not having finished art school myself, not even having gone to a real art school. Critiquing class, you know, like you have to sometimes, like when you're like finishing your degree, you have to select pieces that you can defend. You know, the 10 pieces that you will fight for, I think is the terminology that I've heard people use. And when I talk to some of my former students who go off to college, they talk about like their critiquing class and what faces them as they are selecting those pieces. And they're like, you know, this just makes me sweat putting together my portfolio for looking for freelance work. And I said to them, I was like, wow, you know, I mean, in freelancing, you don't have to do that whole defense of your work. You know, you just put the pieces that you, the artist, feel are great. And, the clients will come or they won't, and you know, update your portfolio as needed. But there's so much less pressure in that environment. But when you're in that critiquing class, there's this whole notion of having to defend your ideas. And I wonder if that's what is also part of this game that you're talking about, is like you're engaged in this and maybe, yeah, you're not as skilled as so-and-so professional who's done, you know, character concept design work for EA Games or the movies and whatnot. But as long as you can defend what you did and demonstrate some kind of intentionality, whether it is some kind of emotional or intellectual intentionality that went into this design to show that you weren't just kind of going, bah, 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 drawing with like your left hand or, you know, drawing with your eyes closed, then you've achieved something there. I mean, is that, am I getting anywhere with that?
No, I think you absolutely are. To me, it sounds like, you're reminding me that one of the tension points, it's between theory and practice, basically, where, both in the case of 30 characters in 30 days, you're signing up for a commitment to deliver something, a lot like signing up to deliver something to a client, and, you know, you do your best within certain limitations. And when you take away the limitations, it's less about exploring the finishing. It's more about exploring the theory or demonstrating the theory and your technique or whatnot, that that becomes the indication of quality. And those things can be pretty tense opposing forces.
Yeah. But as is anything, though, I mean, like when you're creating something, if there's not a bunch of tension, if there isn't like some kind of anguish in the actual creative process, then what's the point of doing it? It's like I think of that line from that TV series Home Movies, where Coach McGurk says to Brendan Small, "If you're not immediately good at something, Brendan, it's not worth doing." You know, and he's obviously presenting the opposite point of view that we should have, but. Yeah. But I mean, you know, I don't know. I think that struggle stuff is hand-wringing as it might sound sometimes is actually a good thing, because that's what's going to actually create interesting stuff, is sweating those tensions.
Exactly. And putting yourself in there firsthand, where you're not just spectating. It's cool to be a spectator and support and learn by observing, but it's when you're in there firsthand that you experience those tensions and you start learning your own trade-offs and how you want to make them. It's a great way to build experience.
Yep. So do you have any ideas on what we might do for our 30-30 challenges? Because we've been talking about that a little bit.
Well, we've, let's see, as you mentioned, 30 classes in 30 days is... And we're actually going to be doing this the same month as 30 characters in 30 days,
mm-hmm.
Which we look forward to connecting more with that project and with Tyler James on all this. But 30 classes in 30 days is more of a learning challenge. And there will be definitely things to produce and create. But the emphasis will be more about exploring, I think, the connections between a variety of creative disciplines and techniques and tools.
Yeah. We were talking about creating like a public, well, I say like we were talking about this like it may not happen, but it's going to happen. We're going to have like a public area where the works of people who participate in this project will be on display, right?
Oh, yeah. There will be... The right now we're calling it the student showcase. And that's it's a really important part of our community at Lean Into Art, where we want to have that dialogue with students and teachers, everyone that's participating in our community that wants to share their work and discuss it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And both be a place where you can have that safe discussion behind behind some kind of partition, keeping you so the public isn't necessarily privy to what's being discussed, right? Just like in a traditional classroom, if you're having a critique review, it's not out in an auditorium and broadcast on television. But there is some part of it that we're in the internet age, and I think that sharing this process publicly is an important thing. I think it's a valuable thing. Seems like these days it's not. People are just accustomed to this idea of getting all the behind the scenes and thought process along with the thing too nowadays, right? Young people are just accustomed to getting that along with the stuff, like, you know, knowing instinctively what the Tumblr account is of all their favorite cartoonists or creators, not just knowing where their YouTube channel is. So, I just think these days is just a natural thing we expect. And but on top of it, there is a lot of value to be had in, like you would say, capturing and documenting and sharing that sort of process, that intellectual justification for what you did, or emotional justification, right?
It's a good practice, and obviously we'll be providing a platform for doing that practice, and I'm betting that there will be a lot of work that comes out of 30 classes in 30 days. Let's see, should we talk about any of them specifically, or
sure, we can.
We probably should release. I would like to not just flood it, because obviously we're still working with teachers, and we have a schedule that is. It's getting revised, and more and more awesome things are being brought into it by the day at this point.
At this point, yeah.
But we know that there's certainly some things that will be a core part of it. So I didn't want it to overly tease if we just talk only about, yeah, this event's going to happen, here's some things. But for instance, like something you might learn is, like, you'll be presenting, right, Jersey?
No, I'm just going to sit back and watch. No, yeah, of course I'm going to. I mean, right now, at the time of this recording, one of the series of workshops that I proposed for inclusion in this thing, this could change because as we're getting more teachers involved who are proposing a lot of really interesting stuff, it's like, gosh, you know, it's kind of better than what I wanted to do, my comics fundamentals course, like a variation on that, which is a class for adults that I teach in Ann Arbor. I've taught it for 2 years now. It's based upon a lot of teaching I've done over the last 5 years. It's sort of a 6-week course that I did, which is sort of like a soup to nuts approach to making a comic story. Obviously, I would have to heavily modify it for 30-30 because there's not 6 weeks in the month to do that. So I would probably combine a couple of them, but each session has an action item of, here's the assignment, here's the thing you should do for preparation for discussion on next week's episode or next week's class. So things like, one of the classes concludes with, go for a walk with a digital camera and or a sketchbook, and do not think about anything in particular. Go to a favorite place, a place where you can clear your mind, a place where you can feel at ease and relaxed. And the moment you see something interesting that you just makes you go, hey, you know, and I don't want anything any more fully formed as a thought than just that. Capture it. Take a picture of it. Draw it. Whichever. And then the following week, we bring back the pictures or sketches and we review them as a group. And then my job as the instructor is to find the common threads between the different pieces that they did. So like one student, there was like a lot of focus on depth. Like all of the pictures had something framing a distant object. Like tree branches in the foreground, an object way off in the distance. And that was like, it was in 9 out of every 10 photos that this person showed me. And so I said, well, wow, look at this. Were you thinking about that when you did it? No, it just looked cool. Oh, well, then this is something to think about in your work is incorporating, as you make a comic, incorporating lots of shots with a lot of sense of depth to it, because it's something you gravitate towards, something you have a natural inclination for. So that's the kind of like instructional and reflective kind of activities that will be available in that course. But then also, you know, completing comics pages based on these little mini exercises. So then the intent is by the end of it, you at least have a couple comics pages done and a real clear sense of how you can finish this project. You know, having a sense of this is what it's going to be about. These are the characters. This is how long it's going to be. And here's a couple pages to get me off and going. So after you're done with the class, you can finish a book.
You bringing up the flow of your class, which sounds really fun. I'm hoping to have some time to actually experience some of the classes too. When I hear that, I'm like, man, this is going to be so fun. But that, I'm picturing a few things. There's the format of the class, which will be sort of a more of a seminar workshop in the brief compared to where, you know, something that may be 2+ hours of material. Really, we're going to be doing slices of those learning modules, right? Where mm-hmm. there it may not be. You wouldn't have to go to 8 hours of class 30 days in November, right?
Right.
That would be less of a challenge, more torture.
Yeah.
We want it to be tough, but not insane.
No, I should say that, yeah, the Comics Fundamentals course is typically 2 hours, but it would probably be a little bit shorter in a web version. It'd probably be more like hour to hour and a half, followed by some kind of lab time afterwards, right?
Yeah, and that's part of what we'll be providing is a variety of these experiences as well. So you mentioned lab time, and some of what we'll have is sort of a shared creative time in yep. In this live environment. Actually, we'll be using Adobe Connect yeah. for that.
So yeah, shared creative time, instructional time, where there's like a presentation / interactive discussion. And then in the commons, in the on the website sort of time shifted area where it's like a forum kind of thing, that's where you get to interact with the other classmates. That's where you can post the pieces that you've been working on. And so like a class, right? Like, what's the common wisdom on this? If I remember right, it was like for every credit hour you take in college, you're expected to do 4 to 8 hours of homework. Is that right? Does that sound familiar to you?
I've heard that measure. I thought you were going in the direction of creating that hour, because it's a lot more work than an hour.
Yeah, it is. No, it definitely is. Yeah, for every credit hour that you experience, that's at least 5 to 10 hours on the part of the instructor to create.
Yeah, well, exactly. And depending on the topic, potentially even more.
Yeah.
I've heard that kind of rule of thumb, but I would bet it varies based on school and culture. And
sure. But where I'm going with that is that we're talking about an hour and a half of class time. Maybe if you want to do it all together with lab, it's maybe 2 to 2.5 hours. That's what I could see being appropriate for a Comics Fundamentals course. But then the student is expected to do several hours worth of work between each session in order to meet the goals of the course, right? So, I mean, we're talking about, even though you're not talking about like 8 hours of class a day, you are talking about a pretty, just like how 30 characters in 30 days is, oh my gosh, that's, let's say one character design takes 2 hours, right? That's 2 hours a day for a whole month. That's 60 hours you're putting in on this project. And that's like keeping it lean, right? So.
Oh yeah. And it's all too easy to have some of those turn into a short story and a character that you rendered a lot. And then, you know, well, from my experience, I participated in both the 2009 and 2010 30 characters in 30 days. And yeah, it was intense. My wife keeps asking me, are you going to do it again this year? And I just laugh, but
You know, it'd be cool. And this is totally like pie in the sky wish thinking is, wouldn't it be cool if we could also create like a live video? Oh, here's how you do it. You do it through Google Plus. You create a hangout that's just never ending of a 24-hour comic sort of room where, you know, people could just be working on 24-hour comics, and it's just an open hangout that's just set up and accessible through the Lean Into Art website or something like that. I don't know if we can pull that off on top of everything else we got to do, but that is something we could think about as possible events to run on the site down the road or something like that. That's something I'm thinking about doing for Kids Read Comics 2012, is actually have like an open Skype connection set up in a room and a projected screen where cartoonists could all, and have it be a, but not a 24-hour comic room, but like a 1-hour comic room, like from noon to 1 p.m. We're doing 1-hour comic, and it's in this room in the library. But guess what? You can also participate anywhere in the world at that time, and we'll broadcast you on the, so we have this big tiled screen of all these little video windows of people all doing their 1-hour comic kind of thing.
I love that. I love seeing what the like captured video of like when the space shuttle or whatnot would do that with classrooms or the space, you know, International Space Station. Bringing people together at the same place at the same time, even if it's virtual, there's a more depth to that shared experience. Where we don't just have that. And so your Comics Fundamentals class will be very much a, there's a lot of live experience in it. There's there's follow up as well. So there's a bit of time shifting, quite a bit of live, but other classes we'll be presenting will be, more time shifted.
That's
so
true.
The shared experience aspect will be in those, like in the commons on the leanintoart.com site. Right.
Right.
Or in other channels, hanging out on Twitter and hashtags and whatnot. It's a more flexible, time-shifted way, but occasionally bringing us together. So with these focused live classes and with labs, so kind of an interplay between multiple styles of sharing that information.
Right. Right, just like how we're doing this kind of sharing right now, where I've got a PDF open in one pane, you've got a PDF open in another pane, then we've got this whiteboard that we can interact with. A lab could be something very similar, where somebody shows up, they say, hey, you want to look at this PDF? We put it up on the screen, and we talk about it as a group. Can you look at this JPEG file of this thing I've been working on, and we'll talk about it as a group. We'll all interact with it. We can draw on top of these PDFs, too, if I'm not mistaken. I'm going to try it. I'm going to draw my PDF.
I love your fearless adoption of the technology. And it's working.
And it's working. I'm drawing. Well, let me make the marker bigger here.
It's really, it's that kind of, this is a fun sandbox, actually. Not to just give Adobe a whole bunch of commercial time here, but they really have something that's pretty unique with Adobe Connect, with, we can have such a fun sandbox environment where we actually have two presentations on the screen right now and a whiteboard and both of our faces, right? Yep. And we're all hanging out together.
Welcome to the future.
Yeah. And we can shift and reconfigure. We can make one of them be full screen all of a sudden if we wanted. Watch this. Bam. Full screen. Sorry if that was a surprise.
It didn't. It didn't change it on my screen.
It didn't change it on your screen. Okay, interesting.
So wait a minute. So you just made your presentation full screen?
I did.
Oh, let me do it on mine. See what happens. Whoa! Hey, there it is. I'm looking at your presentation all huge, and then I can shut it off and go back to seeing your video again.
Yeah. So there is some flexibility with how we as instructors and learners get to interact with this tool. So these are going to be some fun classes.
I think so. I think so too. And yeah, and just being able to, like, what I'm doing right now on my presentation is I'm just doing some examples of how you could just draw, like, okay, take this panel and I circle it just like a sports guy, right? Like when you see like those football play-by-plays where they circle the different things in the field, and I'm like circling this panel, like, take this and move it over here and it'll look a lot better. And I draw an arrow showing where to put it. Gosh, that's almost as good as being there, right? You know? So yeah, very, very fun.
And I have a question about this character right here, right?
Yeah. You just circled somebody's head, put a big question mark. Exactly. Hey, look at this right there.
Yeah. Why is he placed this way relative to the rest of the scene? And I just came up with a question, you know, so we can not just say, you know, pronouns and use extra description because it's radio. It's like, no, this is video with like annotation. We can write on stuff and get extra specific. And
right.
I love it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, another thing, going back to some of the stuff that where all of this kind of evolved out of, at least for me, is with the Art and Story show, we did this thing called Art and Story Supreme, where we offered office hours, and I'm doing air quotes when I say that, where listeners of the show could have us, for each of the hosts, for an hour on Skype anytime they wanted to talk about stuff that they're wondering about in their work. And sometimes they would share like a JPEG or two of their pages. Like, hey, I want you to look at the storytelling moments in this sequence. And I got it thumbnailed. And, you know, I just want to know if it flows right. Well, then I would have to download the JPEG. I'd open it up in Photoshop. I'd do a couple tweaks on it. And I'd do all the circling, everything. And I have to send it back to them over Skype and then say, okay, now look at that file that I just sent you on Skype. And see that panel that I circled in red and where I moved it? And I'd have to describe what I just did, you know. Whereas this is, yeah, a little bit cooler, a little bit more robust than that.
Now. Yeah, it just helps to see those things grow live because the drawing on the screen becomes an animated demonstration in and of itself.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if it stays there. I'm going to click on another page. Go back. Oh, it does. The drawings stay on the associated slide.
It did? It did not for me, just to let you know.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Maybe there's a way. We're still figuring out some of the aspects of the tool. Oh, now there it is.
Okay. Maybe it just took a second to refresh and update itself.
Yeah, it could be. Okay.
Super neat. Well, okay. I think we've given a good preview of where we're going to get ahead with this thing conceptually, and then also with some specific details, highlighted some of the different kinds of people that we hope will be a part of this thing. I should say, this is where I have to say, by the time people listen to this, maybe we'll have already announced what kind of pricing is going to be involved with this. But even if we haven't, the bottom line is this stuff ain't free. There's a lot of layers of complexity to making something like this, both in terms of developing the content. Creating a course is a lot of work. But then there's also fees incurred from using the software. Adobe Connect is not free. You can look online to find out how much it costs to use Adobe Connect, right? Running the website, running the different services that we need to implement in order to make this thing a seamless and fun service for people to interact with, that all costs money. So these classes will be fee-based. And like I said, if it's not in the site now, it will be soon, how much it's going to cost in order to take these classes. But here's my promise. I'm going to put everything I got into it, and I'm sure Rob is too, to make it absolutely worth every single penny.
Absolutely.
Or Pfennig, or Lira, or I'm trying to think of some other currencies. Gold
doubloons. I accept gold doubloons.
Rubles. Whatever digital... what's that digital currency that some people are trying to like...
Bitcoin,
yeah. It'll be worth every Bitcoin.
It'll absolutely.
Every Zynga buck. We're going to tie it in with Zynga. We're going to make this thing completely Facebook-y, and every time you do anything on Lean Into Art, it notifies all your friends on Facebook. I just did a thing! You should too.
Well, we'll leave that up to you. You can... By all means, ping your friends on Facebook, you know, with our name, but,
yeah,
I don't know. We've got, actually, what's funny, we do have some fun ideas and plans for stuff in that nature, but not in the, I just petted a cow. Will you pet a cow too? So I get two cows and stuff like that.
Is that a real thing? Is that a real
cow? I think, yeah. I think that's its name. Oh my gosh. Yep. You go in and with all your computing technology and advancements of humanity and the internet and everything, and you click that cow.
It reminds me of there was a comedian who was on the TV show Dr. Katz back in the 90s. And this is like right when the internet was starting to take off, AOL and all that stuff. And it was a comedian who was complaining bitterly about a friend of his who was telling him to get online. Because that's where everything's happening. It's on the net. And so he gets in this chat room and he's all excited and he's all looking forward to talking with people from all across the world. And the first message that pops up is, ping, do you like dogs? It was his indictment on how all this technology ultimately doesn't make conversation any better because people are still bad at talking to each other. But it seems like it was the precursor to Farmville. Pet the cow.
Yeah, totally. I should look that up and add it to the show notes. It was actually a game designer's sort of critique on that whole world. Essentially by creating that, which, but it itself became very popular also.
Well, I remember also talking with a guy a couple of years back who was very resistant to the idea of using social networks. And I said, why, what's your holdup? And he said, well, it's like, if I post anything about what I'm interested in thoughts that I want to, discussions I want to have, complicated ideas that are really worth unboxing, nobody responds to me. But if I say, what should I have for breakfast, Fruit Loops or Cocoa Puffs, I get 45 responses from people all voting for their favorite, right? You know, he's like, so it doesn't raise the level of conversation. You know, you and I know that, well, all technology can be used for good or evil, and it all depends on how you phrase yourself and what audiences you approach. But
questions are easy to answer,
that's
right?
That's true.
Yeah, basic opinion, where some I have to actually formulate my thoughts if I'm trying to communicate something actually that's rich or complex. Yep. Kind of ties back to our initial conversation. You know, if I have an emotional response or something that's more analytical, the analytical one's like, man, I'm busy. I'm just in an elevator here checking my Twitter.
Yep.
So I guess I'll not respond to that.
Exactly. All right. Well, I think we're done. At any rate, I got to get motoring in a second here because I got another class to go to. But where can we find information about our stuff? If you haven't heard us say the words Lean Into Art, it's leanintoart.com. Lean Into Art on the Twitters.
Mm-hmm. That's where you go.
Everything is there. And any last thoughts? Any last summary statement?
No, I think actually we ended up tying everything together with the questions being, you know, emotional. I know you rock, Jersey.
No, we're both good at this stuff.
Yeah. I was commenting on Jersey's victory pump on video and whatnot. It is cool. I love connecting these topics, and I think we did, and we do it because it's a fun exercise and it's beneficial because when you go to create stuff and you're open to connecting things, you're going to probably either create it more easily or pull off whatever you were intending to pull off.
Or at the very least, it's just fun to think about. So
that's true.
All right. So then we will see you guys next time. Until then, I've been Jersey Drozd of comicsaregreat.com and leanintoart.com. Oh, and Jersey on Twitter.
And I have been Rob Stenzinger, which I'm Rob Stenzinger on the Twitter. And you can check me out. My blog is actually at robstenzinger.posterous.com.
Okay. Show notes for this episode can be found at leanintoart.com. Questions or comments? Email us at leanintoart@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, username leanintoart. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to breathe when you lean.